Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. Letter 87 is focused on the topic of wealth, and this can comprise a lot of things. It could be money in hand, it could be money that you think is coming to you, it could be possessions, whether they're the things that you're wearing or the house that you live in. It could cover all sorts of grounds. And Seneca, as a Stoic, thinks that wealth is not by itself a good. Now, when people hear that, they almost immediately switch over, oh, you think wealth isn't good? You must think it's bad. And Seneca doesn't think it's bad either. It's in the class of what the Stoics call the indifference, things that are in the middle, which could be used or desired or pursued good or in bad ways, right? Well or poorly, but they're not by themselves valuable. And you might say, wait a second, wealth isn't valuable? You can, you know, walk into a place and plunk some money down and get something with it. What has value if not that? Well, yes, wealth can be exchanged for things, but it doesn't have genuine value according to the Stoics. And he begins by talking about a Stoic paradox. He says, I was a shipwrecked sailor before I ever took ship. How it happened, I refrain from mentioning, lest you think it counts as one of the Stoic paradoxes. And then he says, not one of them is false, not one is as strange as it seems at first. And this is the nature of paradoxes. Some genuine paradoxes are irresolvable, but the Stoic paradoxes were all things that they would assert, and other people thought, no, well, that can't be right. But then if you look at it from the Stoic perspective, it actually does make a lot of sense. And so one of the Stoic paradoxes that he doesn't bring up, but is actually quite apropos of this, is only the wise person is rich. And that is paradoxical because you can say, well, you can be wise and dirt poor. Look at that bum over there spouting wisdom, right? He doesn't have a stitch of extra clothing to his name, and the stuff he's wearing is rags that are falling apart. And yet he's able to discourse like Socrates or Diogenes or whoever. Well, rich is going to be something that we're going to measure in other ways. And it takes a little while to shift our perspective to do that. Seneca thinks that most people have mixed up ideas about wealth. So he tells us a little story about the recent trip that he took, and he says, the trip has taught me how many of our possessions are superfluous. We can do without them, how easily we can lay them aside by choice, since when necessity deprives us of them, we do not feel the loss. Now, a lot of people do feel the loss. You know, they drop their phone into the aqueduct and it gets wet or something. Oh my gosh, I've lost everything. Seneca would say, no, you've lost the stuff that was on your phone and you may incur some inconveniences tracking the information down. And it's going to cost you a little bit of money to get a new phone if you want a new phone, but you haven't lost yourself. And so he goes on and he gives examples about, you know, eating figs and riding in a country wagon and all of that sort of stuff. The most interesting part of this is where he talks about debt. He says, when it's a matter of income, you size up a man carefully before you entrust him with a loan or even with a benefit, for you regard benefits to his expenditures. This is the way that people who are obsessed with money look at things, doing a good deed for something. They want to know the cash value. He says, his property is extensive, but so too are his debts. He has a lovely house, but he borrowed money to purchase it. No one turns out a more splendid retinue, but he doesn't pay his bills. And he says, do you think a person is rich just because they have nice things, because they eat from golden plates, they own a plantation in every province, their account fills a fat scroll? He says, this person is a poor man all the same. Why? Because he's in debt. And then somebody could say, well, wait a second, what about a rich guy who's not actually in debt, who actually has all of this stuff and isn't sort of pretending or coasting along on creditors? He says, well, he's in debt too. How? How much does he owe, you ask? Everything. And Seneca here says something really important. Or do you perhaps think that owing one's goods to fortune is somehow different from owing a human creditor? What is he saying there? Every nice thing that you've got can be taken away. I'll use myself as an example. This nice chalkboard, somebody could come along and break it. This wonderful Seneca book. Somebody can come along and burn it. I could drop it off of a high building and never see it again. This tie that I enjoy wearing and is quite attractive, that could get ripped apart, and we could go on and on and on. Even your body, you're going to give it back sooner or later. And it's not going to stay the same, by the way, as it gets older and more out of shape. Even if you do exercise, sooner or later, you're going to give it back to fortune. So this is an important way to sort of reconfigure our views on property, possessions, and wealth. Seneca is now, for the rest of the letter, going to put forth a bunch of syllogistic arguments for why wealth is not a good, and then he's going to provide us with some important explanations. And I'm not putting every single argument on the board because we've got them in the text and we can run through them. Instead, we want to look at what the argument is and what he has to say about the argument by way of explanation. So the first argument that he makes, the first syllogism, goes like this. That which is good makes people good, just as in musical skill, that which is good makes one a musician. That's the first premise. Things depending on fortune do not make a person good. And then the conclusion is, thus such things are not goods. And he says, against this, the Peripatetics, or the Aristotelians, argue our first premise is false. People do not automatically become good from what is good. In music, there are things that are good. For example, a flute, a lyre, or an organ, an instrument for playing, but none of these makes a person a musician. And this is quite true. All you need to do is go into a guitar store and see some rich kid buying a guitar and picking it out and plunking away on it. And you're like, well, that guy sucks. He's not a musician at all. He's not good. Buying the super expensive guitar doesn't actually make him good. Now, Seneca says, here's our reply. You don't understand our premise about what's good in music. We're not referring to the equipment. We're referring to the things that make a person a musician. You're only considering the accoutrements of the skill. You don't look to the skill itself. What is the good thing in music? It's the musicianship. It's the skill. It's the talent. It's the exercise and experience that eventually becomes consolidated in an ability to play well. So what's good is making somebody good, but gifts of fortune are not doing that. So he says, I want to make the point a little bit more clear. Good in the skill of music is said in two different ways. One referring to what promotes the musician's results, the other to what promotes his skill. The instrument, flutes, and organs, and strings have to do with the results, not with the skill itself. So because the musician is skilled even without them, although he might not be able to use his skill. Where the human being is concerned, though, we don't find the same duality, for the good of a human being is the good of a life. Wealth is not the sort of thing that can actually provide you with that good. I mean, you could say, well, can't you buy a book of Stoic philosophy? Sure. But the buying of it doesn't automatically make you learn it, right? It just puts the tool in your hands. And now it's up to you to actually read it and make it part of your life. And like Seneca says, you know, it takes a lot of time to cultivate that. Let's look at the second premise, or second syllogism. He says, that which can belong to the vilest and most despicable kinds of people is not a good. But wealth can belong to the pimp and the manager of gladiators. Therefore, wealth is not a good. Now, you might say, what's wrong with being a manager of gladiators? I mean, that sounds like a pretty cool job, doesn't it? And here's where, you know, so many people get misled by the little bits of ancient culture that they get to see through the media. Being a gladiator was being a slave. And being the kind of person who made their money by managing slaves was actually viewed as being disreputable, being kind of disgusting. Sometimes people like that would get, you know, glorified, but they'd get glorified in the same way that sometimes, you know, we look at things that we know are supposed to be gross and we're like, yeah, that's really cool. I'm going to be edgy and push it, right? This is worth thinking about. Can something that actually belongs to and is sought after by those who we look at as being morally depraved, on the wrong track, can that really be a genuine good? And so, you know, here's where Seneca considers a counterexample. He says, your premise is false. Which premise? In the teaching of literature, medicine, and navigation, we see that the relevant goods belong to the humblest kinds of people. Now, you know, teaching of literature, you might say, well, wait a second, what do you mean the humblest kind of person? Well, a lot of times, the people who were the tutors were slaves in ancient Rome, very often brought from Greece. or medicine. Doctors were not highly regarded. I mean, they weren't totally at the bottom of society, but they didn't have the status that we give them now. Or navigation. He says, these skills don't make any claim to greatness of spirit. They don't soar to the heights. They don't despise the things of fortune. Virtue is different. Virtue elevates a person and places him above all that mortals hold dear. And gives some example about people who would do, you know, things that are considered to be disgusting. And he says that there are those whom wealth befalls in the same way as silver coins fall in the sewer. Virtue takes its stand above such things. It's assessed in its own currency. Things that can belong to just anybody don't count with it as goods. Medicine and navigation don't debar themselves and their practitioner from the admiration of such things. Someone who's not a good man can still be a doctor, a helmsman, a teacher of literature, and then he says, for heaven's sake, even a cook, right? But you can't be a good person without having virtue. So if we think about the things that can be shared, if the Stoics are right, then that means that if people that we look down on or say, well, they're not good people, can enjoy that thing, it's not truly a good, even though we might enjoy it too. It's just not a good in the true sense. There's a really interesting argument that he provides after that. And here he starts talking about causes. He says, that which is good does not come of what is bad, but wealth comes of avarice, therefore wealth is not a good. So for those who don't know, what is avarice? Another word for it is greed. Wealth comes from this desire to have wealth, right? You desire wealth, therefore you work to get it, or you scheme, or you do whatever you're going to do. Invent the proverbial better mousetrap, right? And then you get the money. So Seneca is saying here that wealth is coming from something that is bad, so wealth cannot be something good. He says, one might say it's not true that good does not arise from what is bad, because money arises from temple robbery and theft. And he says, thus, temple robbing and theft are indeed bad, but only because they produce more bad consequences than good. For they yield a profit, but they also produce fear, anxiety, torments of mind and body. And then he says, this is a terrible argument, terrible counter-argument. Whoever says this must admit that just as temple robbery is bad insofar as it produces bad consequences, it's also good because it produces a good consequence for you. And we don't want to say that sort of thing. By the way, temple robbery, why is this a big deal? Oh, because it's pissing off the gods? No, it has nothing to do with that. Temples were where people left money. It was like a bank. So this is sort of like robbing the bank. Being a bank robber is not a good thing. So he goes on and he says, goods cannot arise from what is actually bad. And then he has another thing that he says that's quite interesting. The greatest penalty for criminal acts is in the acts themselves. Now, that is paradoxical, is it not, to say that those who do the wrong thing, the biggest punishment is that they actually do the wrong thing. Why is that a punishment? They want to do the wrong thing, don't they? They're getting to do what they like, and they're getting away with it in many cases. He says, you're mistaken if you make them wait for the prison or the executioner. Such acts are punished right away when performed, indeed in the very act of performing them. Therefore, good does not arise from what is bad any more than a fig from an olive tree. Goods cannot but run true to type, he says. Now, he says that some other members of his school answer this objection as follows. So here's entertaining the possibility that money could be a good. Suppose that money is a good, regardless of where it's obtained. Even so, and even if money is sometimes gained by temple robbing, it's not the case that the money actually came from ones robbing the temple. Think about it like this. A gold coin is in the same jar with a snake. If you take out the coin, you did not take it out by reason of a snake being there as well. That is to say, the jar does not supply me with gold because it also contains a snake. It supplies gold in spite of the fact that it contains a snake. In the same way, temple robbing produces a profit, not because it's a despicable and criminal act, but because it contains profit as well. So you can have the good, and the bad is just kind of accidental to it. And then he says, these two cases are not the same at all. In the one, I can take out the gold without the snake. In the other, I cannot have the profit without robbing the temple. The profit is not adjacent to the crime, but combined with it. So when we desire wealth for the wrong reasons, there's no getting around that aspect of it. He also talks about results, and he's got an argument here about results. He says, if the pursuit of something brings many bad results, that thing is not a good. Our pursuit of wealth brings many bad results. Therefore, wealth is not a good. And he says, okay, somebody might question this one. Your premise has two meanings. One meaning is that our pursuit of wealth brings many bad results. But let's take a counterexample. Our pursuit of virtue also brings many bad results. A person takes ship for reasons of study and is shipwrecked or captured, right? They wanted to be virtuous, but it brought about some bad results. Then he says, the second meaning is like this. That through which we get bad results is not a good. And he says, from such a premise, we can't infer that we get bad results through wealth or through pleasure, or else if we get many bad results through wealth, then wealth is not only a good, but actually a bad thing. But your school says only that wealth is not a good, not that it's a bad thing. Besides, you grant that wealth has its uses. You count it as one of the advantages of life. And so he says, well, here's a response to that. You're wrong to think that wealth is a disadvantage. Wealth does not harm anyone. What does the harm is one's own foolishness or the iniquity of another. Just as a sword doesn't harm anyone, but is only the tool of the slayer. So wealth doesn't hurt you because you're harmed for the sake of your wealth. And he says, here's a better response. And this comes from the Stoic philosopher Posidonius. He says, wealth is a cause of evils, not because wealth itself does anything bad itself, right? The dollar bills don't do anything, or the stock certificates, but it motivates those who will do bad things. And he talks about here a difference between what he calls an efficient cause and an antecedent cause. And here we're getting into a little bit of Stoic metaphysics that we don't have to go too deep into. Suffice it to say, an efficient cause is something that makes something happen. An antecedent cause is something that's there in the chain of causality, but it doesn't directly make the thing happen. Rather, it sets things up in such a way that something can happen. So he says here, wealth has this latter sort of causality. It inflames the mind, gives birth to arrogance, attracts resentment, and sets the mind at odds with itself. To such an extent, we delight to have a reputation for affluence, even though that reputation is likely to hurt us. So the wealth by itself doesn't do anything, but it brings out the worst stuff in us. Attributable to us, by the way, not actually attributable to the wealth. And he says, listen, good things are pure. They don't corrupt the mind. They don't cause anxiety. They elevate and expand the mind. And he says, somebody might go too far and say wealth is not only not a good thing, but is even a bad thing. And Seneca says, no, because it doesn't harm us in itself. It doesn't have efficient causality. But we do have to be careful with wealth because of that. And then he goes on and he talks about some other arguments that Posidonius is giving. And there's actually two syllogisms here. Posidonius says that you should reason like this. Those things which confer on the mind neither greatness nor confidence nor freedom from anxiety are not goods. That's one premise. Wealth, health, and similar things do not do any of these things. Second premise, therefore they're not goods. And then he expands the syllogism saying, those things which confer on the mind neither greatness nor confidence nor freedom from anxiety, but instead produce extravagance, conceit, and arrogance are bad. Things dependent on fortune drive us to these latter, therefore they are not goods. Now notice he's not saying that by this wealth would become something bad, but it's definitely not a good. And the idea here is that, the greatest values are these things, greatness of mind, confidence, freedom from anxiety. If you can't actually provide that, then it's not really a good. Seneca goes on and says, one might say by this reasoning that will not even be advantages or what the Stoics would call preferred indifference. And he says, advantages are of a different status from goods. An advantage is that in which there's more utility than an annoyance. A good has to be a genuine good and innocent of any sort of harm. So a good is on a higher level than something that is merely advantageous, something that's useful, something that is convenient. The last syllogism that Seneca is going to provide here runs like this. And this is a little tricky one. That which is good is not made up of things that are bad, but many instances of poverty make up one instance of wealth. Therefore, wealth is not a good. Let's contextualize this a little bit. So, something that's good is not going to be made up of a whole bunch of instances of something that's bad. What would be being poor? Okay, so if I only have $10 in my pocket, I'm pretty poor, at least here in the United States, right? If that's all I have to subsist on, I got maybe one or two meals ahead of me, and that's about it, depending on where I'm living. Now, what if I multiply that by 1,000 and I've got $10,000? That's actually a lot of money. It's not that much money. It's not like I could live on that for a year, unless I'm being extremely frugal. So let's add another thousanding of that. And now we've got 10 million. Oh, now I'm really rich, right? That 10 million is made up of a whole bunch of little $10. And each of those $10 is a little bit of poverty. So how do you combine all this poverty and make wealth? Well, you do so by engaging in sophistical reasoning, right? And Seneca says, this is not a good argument. This syllogism is not recognized by our school. It's both devised and solved by the Peripatetics, the Aristotelians. Posidonius, however, says this sophism, which has been bandied about by dialecticians, is refuted by Antipater, who is one of the Stoic scholars, by saying this, and here's a good argument. Poverty refers not to possession, but to subtraction, or as the ancients called it, privation. It refers not to what someone has, but what they don't have. Thus, it's not possible for anything to be filled up from many instances of emptiness. Wealth is made up of numerous resources, not numerous instances of scarcity. You don't properly understand what poverty is. Poverty is not the condition of possessing a few things, but that of not possessing many things, being deprived of many things. Its meaning is not derived from what it has, but what it lacks. And so, you know, this is a very interesting metaphysical resolution. And you notice Seneca is willing to reject that argument. And that says something. Seneca only wants to use arguments that he thinks are actually on point with this, and he's going to be very critical about how these arguments are used. Here's the question we want to close with, that Seneca is kind of closing with himself. How effective are these syllogisms? Do they actually convince people? Do they change their mind? Do they help them see that wealth itself is not the good that so many people and our culture and the culture of Seneca's time presented as being, that we need to instead shift our focus to something that's genuinely good, like virtue? Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.